Welcome to The Extra on KRDO News Radio, the show that connects you with the topics and issues and people that are important to you. Very important person here today, Dr. Deborah Henderson from DaVita Medical Group. She's a dermatologist. Dr. Henderson, it's so great to see you.
Good morning, Renee.
Thank you so much for coming in. And we have been talking with you all month for our weekly health minutes. And of course, we know dermatology is so important. And you and I were talking before we even started about skin stuff, and it can tend to be one of the most overlooked things that people focus on, can't it?
It can, and unfortunately, so many people are affected by various skin conditions.
And one of them, so before we actually hop in, we are going to dive deeper into skin cancers today, but I kind of wanted to review what we talked about throughout the month for our weekly health minutes. First, let's talk about dermatologists, what they do, and when someone may need to see them. Because, you know, most people start with their general physician, and then it goes from there, right? So let's talk about dermatology and who may need to see a dermatologist.
Perfect. So we are skin cancer and skin specialists in general. We get referrals for skin cancer screenings. We treat inflammatory skin diseases, things that range from acne all the way to photosensitive or autoimmune skin disorders like lupus. And even scarring can be an issue for some people, yeah. And they develop thickened scars, and we'll get referrals for that as well.
That's awesome. Okay, yeah. And it's good to know. And there's different types of dermatologists, right?
Correct.
Some that focus more on, like, medical side, and are there some that focus more on, like, say, cosmetic?
Correct.
Okay.
Most dermatologists will graduate with a degree in medical dermatology.
Okay.
But then there are specialists in the skin of children. We call those pediatric dermatologists. There are skin cancer specialists that remove skin cancer predominantly, and they're called Mohs surgeons.
Okay.
And then there are also dermatopathologists who specialize in diagnosing skin disease under the microscope. We have one at DaVita. His name is Todd Kobayashi. And then we also have cosmetic dermatologists who specialize in keeping the skin looking less photoaged and sun damaged.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that because let's just go ahead and move to that because, you and I were talking before we started, being in this high climate that we are in, we do see a lot of skin issues related to the sun, don't we? Because, of course, we are very sunny state, but in the summertime, that can also lead to some skin issues, can't it?
Correct. So here's a fact. For every 1,000 feet over the sea level, there's a 4% increase in UV exposure. So
Oh, wow.
You can imagine that's substantial at our elevation here in Colorado. And skin cancer, which we'll be talking about today, it's really one of the most common types of cancers diagnosed in the United States, period. So the UV radiation is one of the major predisposing factors for skin cancer development, and that's why I thought we should highlight it more in depth today.
Absolutely. And some of the things that, and just really quick, talking about the summer skin issues, we talk about, of course, the UV exposure. And I've always had this question, doctor, like, you always hear like, okay, well, you need sunscreen, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, what level, right? Because then you say level 50,000, not a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But
sure.
Right. Is there a good level of sunscreen protection to use or that is recommended because you see all this stuff over the counter? Which one is a great one, especially at our elevation?
That's a great question. Generally speaking, an SPF of 30 is what dermatologists recommend. And that's because at an SPF or sun protection factor of 30, 97% of UVB is blocked from the skin.
Okay.
There's not that much better coverage once we get above an SPF of 30, even though nowadays there are sunscreen companies advertising SPFs of 100 or 75.
Right.
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 The problem with sunscreen is that people don't normally apply it appropriately. And so a certain level has to be applied. Generally speaking, 1 ounce or a shot glass worth is necessary to cover the entire body. And really, if you're using chemical sunscreens, they need to be applied about 15 minutes before you go out in the sun. We like water resistant for 40 to 80 minutes types sunscreens mm-hmm. because those tend to be washed off or sweated off
right.
a little less readily. And then we like broad spectrum sunscreens, which cover not only UVB, but UVA radiation as well.
And then the frequency in which you need to, like you said, a lot of folks, of course, doing this when they go to the pool or then maybe they're out running or exercising or whatever. How often should sunscreen be reapplied?
Yeah, that's one of the other hardest parts of sunscreen application is that they really do need to be reapplied every 2 hours.
Yeah, because a lot of folks are like, one and done, and right. Look at me, I'm covered for the day, right?
Right.
Now, what about, and you can look at me and go, Renee, why are we talking about a lot of women, and I'm one of them, mm-hmm. they put SPF in the, say, foundation or the facial cream. Mm-hmm. Does that actually work?
It does, but often, again, we're not applying it thickly enough for it to offer it's enough protection. So if you know you're going to be outside extensively, I always encourage my patients to apply a dedicated sunscreen with their makeup or moisturizer.
Okay. And always to help with cut down on sun exposure, hats,
yes,
clothing, which is really hard when it's like a furnace out and
right,
you're covering yourself too.
Right, but any sun protective regimen is always better with some multimodality regimens. So I always encourage patients to use sun protected clothing, and nowadays they're better than they used to be.
Okay.
Our hats are, they have an ultraviolet protection factor rating or UPF rating. Our clothing, our rash guards are lighter and they're often more waterproof now than they used to be.
Okay.
So they're not quite as heat inducing as they used to be.
Okay, yeah. That's good to know. Okay, so what I think we're going to do, I think we're going to go ahead and take a break now because this will lead us into our talk about skin cancer. And like you said, it is one of the most diagnosed cancers
in the United States.
But again, a lot of folks just kind of don't pay attention to it. So we're going to dive more in depth to that when we come back on The Extra. We're talking with Dr. Deborah Henderson from DaVita Medical Group on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Today, we are talking with Dr. Deborah Henderson. She is a dermatologist with DaVita Medical Group. And doctor, like we kind of just reviewed, sun can be, of course, a leading factor in skin cancer. I'm sure there's, of course, other factors. But let's start talking about skin cancer. We also touched on how skin cancer is one of the highest diagnosed cancers in the country, but yet some of the most overlooked types of cancer. So what are some of the numbers associated with skin cancer?
Absolutely. So right now in the United States, about 1 in 5 Americans will develop skin cancer by age 70.
Wow.
And more skin cancers are diagnosed in the United States than all other cancers combined.
Really?
Correct.
All other cancers combined?
Correct.
And is it just folks are like, oh, I have a mole and it's just a mole and I'm just no worry there? Or what do you think it kind of is?
So a lot of our sun damage happens before the age of 18. And so unfortunately, the sun damage doesn't start to exert its negative effects until later on in life.
Mm.
People are already doing sun protection at that point, but the damage to their skin has been done. And it can sneak up on people, especially the most common form of skin cancer, a basal cell carcinoma, takes a while to declare itself. It's not a super aggressive skin cancer.
Okay.
So people miss it for a while.
So let's talk about, and are there three dominant types or three types of skin cancer, correct?
Yes. Three types we see most commonly here in the United States are basal and squamous cell carcinoma and then malignant melanoma.
Okay. So let's kind of review. We did touch on it a little bit last week in our weekly health minute, but of course, we have limited amount of time.
Sure.
So let's dive in a little bit more and talk about the most common types of skin cancer. Do you want to start with basal?
Let's start with basal cell carcinoma.
Okay.
So it's the most frequently occurring form of skin cancer. And these appear like a pimple that's not going away, pearly or a shiny bump. A little less commonly, it can look a little bit more like a scar or a red or pink patch in sun-damaged skin.
Okay. So those are some great indicators. And when can, of course, you can't generalize, but again, these are the most common that folks see.
Yes. And other features that might key you into this spot being something that is not just a benign pimple is that basal cells will tend to bleed more easily.
Interesting.
They often won't heal. They'll continue to crust over repeatedly. And they, just looking at them, often have more visible blood vessels on their surface or have an indented or sunken in center to
Interesting.
Their appearance.
And so a little bit more bleeding, like you said, and you can see the
blood vessel.
The blood vessel. Interesting. Yep. I'm looking at my hands right now and my arms. You never know. Okay. So what is the next one we're going to talk about?
Okay. The next second most common form of skin cancer is known as a squamous cell carcinoma.
Okay.
The rates of squamous cell carcinomas are still rising in the United States. Estimated 200% increase in incidence over the last 30 years, just so you know. And this can appear more like a red scaling patch or even a wart that's not going away.
Okay.
Again, other warning signs include very easy bleeding to the spot. It won't heal. It's crusting over also.
Okay. And so it sounds kind of like a basil, but a little bit of a difference there.
Different appearance. Okay. But we do lump these together in a category because really? They have similar features. We call these non-melanomatous skin cancers.
Okay.
Because they're not melanoma, which is a distinct, has a distinct behavior, appearance, all of that kind of thing.
Okay. And then the last one is the one of, is of course, most concern, right, when it comes to the skin cancers.
Correct. Malignant melanoma or cutaneous melanomas. And this is by far the deadliest form of skin cancer. Okay. It is only considered responsible for about 5% of all skin cancer diagnoses in the United States, but it on the turn side, is responsible for a majority of skin cancer-related deaths in the United States. And rates are also still increasing of this particular entity, especially in younger females.
Interesting.
Which we think probably is linked to rising rates of tanning bed use.
I was just going to ask, do you think it's tanning bed use?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So yes. Younger females are now being diagnosed with this. Okay. So what are we kind of still seeing some of the kind of visuals on the skin like we are with the basil and...
No.
It look completely different?
It can look completely different, which is why we set it aside in its own little category. This is a uncontrolled growth of the skin's pigment producing cells. Okay. So often this is a brown or black or pigmented spot on the skin. We often tell people to look for an asymmetric spot where half the lesion looks different from the other half because it's growing in that one area uncontrolled. So it doesn't necessarily have symmetry to the lesion. It has an irregular border. It can have multiple colors. But it also might be itching for no reason at all or bleeding for no reason at all.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. So this one is very noticeable.
It is.
Okay.
Usually it declares itself quickly.
Does it?
Yeah.
It kind of just pops up and then it's there.
Absolutely. And there are four main types of melanoma, just so you know. There, the most common type is a superficial spreading cutaneous melanoma, which is just a flat, discolored patch. There are also nodular melanomas that appear more like a typically colored bump on the skin.
Okay.
There's something known as a lentigo maligna, which is an asymmetric patch in heavily sun-damaged skin, such as on the face or ears of older individuals.
Interesting. Okay.
And then the final type is what we call an acral lentiginous melanoma, and this one really surprises people because it's a melanoma of the nail unit or on the sole of the foot or on the palms of the hands.
Really?
Yeah, and because these are not areas where people tend to look at their moles that often, it's often caught at an advanced stage. Unfortunately, it's the most common form of melanoma we see in darker skinned individuals.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about moles, because that is obviously can be a sign if a mole is changing, correct, of a skin cancer.
Correct. And people have atypical moles, or what we call dysplastic nevi, which are unusual looking benign moles. These we don't necessarily consider a melanoma, but they have some of the features we tell people to look out for melanomas, which we call the ABCDEs of melanoma.
Okay.
And A stands for asymmetry, B stands for an irregular border, C stands for multiple colors, D stands for a diameter bigger than a pencil eraser, and E stands for evolution or change. So moles that are changing definitely need evaluation.
Okay. So, and again, go through the A, B, C, D, E's.
Exactly.
Right. So again, and I'm sure all this information is probably on the website, right? So folks, cause that's a lot of information process. Like,
yeah,
wait, is my mole, like, is its border? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So actually, if you go to the KRDO website and look under Ask the Doctor on the Health section, we put a link to the American Academy of Dermatology skin cancer education webpage.
Perfect.
Because there are pictures and all of this information available there.
Yeah, because you think most folks think, well, it's just a mole.
Right.
It's harmless.
Right.
But it can be a true indicator, can it?
Right. And in the simplest terms, if you have a mole that's changing,
yeah,
it's probably worth getting looked at.
At least looked at, right? Because some of those procedures say it is a mole that is changing. Mm-hmm. Getting it checked, getting it removed may not be that difficult.
No, not at all.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it could lead to something, possibly stop something much greater from happening.
Especially with melanoma, because it can be so aggressive. But if caught early, it's very easily treated and prognosis is positive and very high.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick news break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about some treatments that can happen. Also, we have to touch on prevention and a lot more. We are talking with Dr. Deborah Henderson, dermatologist from DaVita Medical Group on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Today, we are talking about skin cancer with Dr. Deborah Henderson. She's a dermatologist with DaVita Medical Group. And Doctor, we were just talking in the break. We're talking about melanoma, which is the deadliest form of cancer, of course, skin cancer. And startlingly enough, you are telling me the age range that some women are being diagnosed now with melanoma. This is scary. And you're watching the numbers go up and up.
Exactly. Rates of melanoma continue to increase in younger females.
And what's the age range kind of there?
So right now, melanoma is the most commonly diagnosed cancer for women aged 25 to 40.
25 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can this be really contributed, like tanning beds, or are there other kind of contributing factors here?
That's really what we surmise, is that as rates of tanning bed use have increased, wow, we see these rates of melanoma continue to increase as well.
And another comment that you brought up while we were in the break is, once they're diagnosed with this, they have to stay in touch the rest of their lives, because that damage is there.
Correct. And unfortunately, melanomas, we follow very, very closely for first 2 years after diagnosis, but then they need skin cancer screenings every 6 months indefinitely.
Indefinitely, for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable.
And just so everyone knows, in 2009, the World Health Organization International Association for Research on Cancer had ample or sufficient research to declare tanning bed use a carcinogen, and they put it in the same category as nicotine, which we know
really
causes
lung cancer. Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable. I bet most people don't. Like, I'm sure I personally, I haven't been in a tanning bed, and I can't tell you how long.
Mm-hmm.
Not my jam, but, you know, I'm sure there's no warning signs. Are there warning signs on tanning
beds?
Well,
in the last decade since this came out, states have been trying to moderate, especially for minors, the amount of use that one can have in a tanning bed use, and try to educate people that are being customers of these tanning bed facilities. But I still think we have a far way to go in terms of education.
And people understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So women 25 to 40 are now the highest dose, highest diagnosed for melanoma.
Right.
That is so sad.
just so everyone also knows, is that tanning bed sessions don't always, increase the risk for melanoma, but they also can increase the risk for cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma and basal cell carcinoma as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
So lots of risk factors there. And let's talk about increased risk factors. Doctor, are there certain, say, demographics that have increased risk factors as far as skin cancers are concerned?
Sure. And we usually talk about risk factors for squamous cells and basal cells separate from those of melanoma. For your more common basal cell and squamous cell, lighter skin individuals, fair complexion, lighter eyes increase the risk for skin cancer of that type. Also, in particular, chronic cumulative sun damage in their case. So over their lifetime, if they're just outside, they're outdoorsy people, they get a lot of cumulative sun damage. That increases their risk. In particular, squamous cell carcinoma patients that are immunosuppressed or transplant patients have, 100 times the increased rate of squamous cell development than that of the general population.
Really?
As well. Yes.
So is there someone, like you are saying, that someone that may be dealing with a transplant or are there things that they can do? And I know we're going to get into prevention a lot more, but let's just focus on that particular person right now. Is there something they can do especially?
Yeah,
or are they going to have to stay completely covered?
Well, they really have to avoid that cumulative sun damage, wearing clothing and sun protection, sunblocks. Also, guidelines have changed where transplant patients are just screened that much more actively. We see them whether they have a history of skin cancer or not,
because
we know
to.
This risk exists.
Interesting. Okay, are there other increased risk factors we need to know about?
Yeah, let me just touch briefly about risk factors for melanoma. This is always a wake-up call to some of my patients, but just having a lot of moles, having 50 mm-hmm. or more benign appearing moles can increase your risk for melanoma. And,
really?
And then the more atypical moles you have, there's actually a syndrome we know of called familial atypical mole and melanoma syndrome. Those patients often have an increased rate of melanoma in their family, and they need additional screening as well.
So moles truly can be an indicator. So what was the number you said? 50 plus
50 or
moles?
More of just benign moles.
Okay. Could be an indicator.
They should come in and get screened.
So now, were you kind of hinting, doctor, that some of these cancers could be hereditary or?
Absolutely. In melanoma in particular, we know that 50% of all melanomas exhibit one general mutation, but there are several other inherited mutations. Even just the mutation for redheadedness has been shown to increase your risk of melanoma, irregardless of how much sun one has had.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a lot of people know that or don't know that?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes our ginger patients, as I call them, come in and they say, hey, you know, they have a family history already of melanoma. Just having a family history of melanoma increases your risk. So their family has encouraged them to come in, even though they're not aware that they have this increased risk individually.
Now, say somebody, they just heard you say, doctor, like, oh, I've got 50 plus moles, right? And they just have concerns. Best thing to do is just go in and see a dermatologist like yourself, and then you can start
Have a baseline,
mm-hmm. right? And just start tracking it and making sure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We get that a lot.
Now, of course, unfortunately, I wish we could talk all day because it's so informative, but we do have limited time. So I want to kind of shift our focus to treatments, if that's okay with you, because I'm sure for the different types of cancers, of course, there are different routes to take as far as treatment is concerned. Some of them, I'm sure, not as invasive as others.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think that's more of the reassuring part to some of the more common skin cancers, basal cell and squamous cell. A lot of these are treated as an outpatient in a dermatologist clinic under local anesthesia. Two of the more common treatments just involve a local surgery around the tumor site of the skin, where we remove the tumor with a few millimeters margins of normal skin and close that with stitches here in an outpatient dermatology clinic.
And then they have to come back for follow-up, of course, to watch and make sure.
For screening.
How often, generally, after, say, just this outpatient procedure, would you say somebody needs to come back for follow-ups to make sure?
The general standard of care after a skin cancer diagnosis for non-melanomatous skin cancer is a 6-month checkup for 2 years following your skin cancer diagnosis.
Okay, that's good.
After that, annually, or if it was a basal cell, then they can do their own skin checks. But generally speaking, we like to see skin cancer patients once a year.
Okay. And so that's kind of the least invasive, I'm assuming, as far as some of the treatments. So let's talk about some of the other treatments.
Sure. We'll talk really quickly about Mohs micrographic surgery. It's a specialized form of skin cancer removal.
I've heard about this. It's quite amazing.
Right, exactly. These are fellowship-trained dermatologists who take thin layers of tissue removal right around the tumor site. While the patient waits, the tissue is fixed. They immediately make a map of that tissue and evaluate 100% of the margins. Only go back and progressively take subsequent layers where they saw skin cancer cells under the microscope until the tissue that's remaining is cancer-free. It has one of the highest rates of cure, and it's tissue-preserving, leaving the smallest possible scar. So it has a lot of advantages. But we're talking about 99% cure rates for a primary skin cancer removal.
That's incredible. Is this only for melanoma-type cancers?
No, it's actually more commonly used for non-melanoma skin cancers, but the indications are often in a site that's tissue-conservative, such as the nose or the ear. There's not a lot of excess skin.
Okay.
For larger, indistinctly bordered skin cancers, for more aggressive subtypes of skin cancer, or those that are recurrent that we've tried cutting out and they keep coming back. So we really need to make sure as much as possible that the cancer has been totally removed at the time of excision.
But it sounds like this is a very successful treatment.
It is, and it's covered by insurance, and it's been around now for decades.
That's incredible. Yep. Okay, we do need to take a quick break. I know we've got so much to talk about. We need to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about the other treatments. And of course, we have to touch on prevention, which can prevent, obviously, some of these skin cancers. So we'll have more. Dr. Deborah Henderson next on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Today we're talking with Dr. Deborah Henderson, dermatologist for DaVita Medical Group. And we still have so much to cover, doctor, but unfortunately, we're in the last few minutes. So I did want to continue with treatments. There are some options that are coming up for treatments, right, for skin cancer that are just, I don't want to say revolutionary, but are changing how it's done, right?
Correct. But even before we get to that, some of our non-melanoma skin cancer treatments that patients are sometimes surprised to realize that are available, we do have things that are not as invasive as surgery, topicals that are cream chemotherapy agents.
Oh, or like a topical?
Yes. Those have been approved for superficial basal cells. So if you're not really crazy about the idea of having surgery, sometimes these creams, or there's an immunomodulating agent called imiquimod that can be applied for a couple weeks to the skin cancer site and eradicate the skin cancer that way.
Wow.
There's radiation. That's an option for older patients who may not be great surgical candidates. And even in the past couple of years, some oral medications for bulkier advanced basal cell carcinoma or squamous cell carcinomas have been approved.
So it sounds like it's expanding. Treatment options are expanding all the time.
All the time.
Perfect. And was there any other treatments we wanted to touch on before we kind of moved into prevention? Because, of course, we have to talk about that.
Absolutely. Let's see. Maybe just for melanoma, melanomas are easily excised when caught early, and a majority of melanomas are caught early. However, when they are caught deeper into the skin, that's what we call tumor thickness. That will sometimes prompt the need for a sentinel lymph node biopsy and more advanced adjuvant melanoma treatments,
okay,
of which we previously never had for our later stage melanoma patients. Their prognosis was very grim.
Okay.
In the last 5 to 8 years, 9 years, there are great immunotherapies, molecular therapies, targeted genetic therapies for our advanced melanoma patients.
Wow. So reach out, right?
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of options there, which is fantastic for treatment. Okay, so of course we need to, and we've kind of touched on this throughout the hour, but prevention is key.
Prevention is so key.
So let's talk about, we've talked about sunscreens, uh-huh, and you said SPF 30 is a good number.
It is a good number. Reapplication every 2 hours. In the last couple of months, the FDA released this study about higher than expected levels of chemical sunscreens in the skin. And so a lot of my patients have been coming in and stating they fear using their chemical sunscreens, but that is not their only option for sunscreen.
Okay.
There are mineral-based sunscreens largely containing titanium or zinc oxide. These are physical blocking agents. And what we generally recommend for children over the age of 6 months of age, they are not absorbed into the sunscreen. They are often the ones that make you look a little bit more white or pasty when they're first applied, but they block UV radiation as opposed to absorb it as with chemical sunscreens. And those are very, very safe. They're better for sensitive skin patients anyway.
And those are available over the counter?
Absolutely.
Okay. And they're just, folks need to look for a mineral based.
Right. Titanium or zinc oxide containing sunblock.
Okay. So I didn't even know that was out there.
Absolutely. And in addition to that, really, people should be aware that peak sun hours are from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So outside during the days during that period of time really increases the risk of the type of intense sun exposure you may get. And if you can avoid or move your outdoor activities either before or after those hours, it would help with your sun protection regimen.
Okay.
And then consider hat, long-sleeved UPF protective clothing, and sunglasses. Always UV blocking sunglasses are key. Melanomas can occur in the eye. We call those ocular melanomas.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. So is that like a special kind of sunglass, like that would have to be a sunglasses that would have to be ordered, say?
No, you know what? Most sunglasses these days do offer some UV protection. It's just become such a prevalent part of sunglass use.
Which is good.
Right.
Yeah. Now talking about the clothing, is that a special light, like kind of line of clothing that you can find, or is it just because you keep talking about a specific kind of type of clothing?
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, even Target, Walmart contains these rash guards that have a UPF protection factor. It stands for ultraviolet protection factor, and it's like sunscreen in your clothing.
Interesting.
Most people don't realize that even wearing a long sleeve shirt that's lightly colored still allows for some UV penetration through lightly colored clothing. So darker clothing of just any type is more protective than lighter colored clothing. But if you really want to go out and look for this, it's very widely available now. Some of these like Columbia brands or outdoor brands will offer sun protective clothing in all of their outdoor wear.
Interesting. Yeah. And of course, a hat, especially if you're trying to protect your face, is always a good thing to do, right?
Good idea for sure.
Okay, so let's talk about tanning beds and just need to avoid them, right?
Yeah. Really, there's no safe level of tan. We like to tell our patients that a tan is your skin's response to injury and its attempt to try to protect itself from UV radiation.
So we're sitting here going, oh, it's a thing of beauty.
It's not.
It's not.
No, it's a response to skin injury from UV radiation. So tanning beds only intensify this. And a single instance of tanning bed use increases the risk for melanoma, squamous cell, and basal cell carcinoma. And so we don't recommend it ever. Some people like to come in and say, I like to get a base tan before going on vacation in order to prevent me from getting sunburn. Having a tan only offers about an SPF of 4. So
Wow. When
you think about the additional protection you would get from just wearing sunscreen, it's substantially different from that of a light tan from a tanning bed.
Yeah, spray tan would be better at that point,
right?
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I understand the desire to look a certain color, and I'm a female, so I get it, and I will spray tan over using a tanning bed any day. In addition to that, for women in particular, that intense UVA exposure really ages the skin.
Wow.
Yeah, over time, and it won't be something you notice right away, but 10 years down the road, you'll start to see increased wrinkling, collagen, elastin breakdown from tanning bed exposure.
Now, doctor, of course, it's summertime. Everybody's out at the pool, enjoying, having fun. I mean, is there like, okay, we know sun exposure in general is just harsh. Like you said, between 10 and 4, that's when it's, you know, most, at, you know, riskiest.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you're at the pool, what are some tips? I mean, you've got your kids there, you're hanging out, you want to splash in the pool.
Absolutely.
Is there, like, take some breaks or, you know, lots of SPF, obviously.
Lots of SPF applied before you even get out in the sun. Seek shade when you can. Get under the umbrella when you're just sitting there by the pool. Reapply your sunscreen. Wear those rash guards that are long sleeved. My kids personally do. They hate it, but they wear them. And
they're
hat.
Like, Mom. Nobody else is wearing these long sleeves, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I wear one also. And reapply your sunscreen. And try to monitor that. As soon as you start to see any, hopefully before you even see sun burning, you take that break and get out of that intense sun.
That's incredible. So much to know. And of course, Doctor, if folks have more questions, would like to make an appointment, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can research us at DaVitaMedicalGroup.com, or our dermatology clinic in particular is available at 719-228-0400.
And of course, we do have a link for the Ask the Doctor on our website. Just go to krdo.com, look under the radio tab, and then click on Ask the Doctor, and you can send in questions that way to Ask the Doctor. And Doctor, it has been so informative. Thank you so much for coming in. And again, folks can reach out and ask you questions as well and make an appointment.
Absolutely. We'd be happy to see them.
Thank you so much for, again, joining us today. And coming up tomorrow on The Extra, we're excited to have the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo here. That's tomorrow on The Extra on KRDO News Radio.